Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing the first of a series of interviews that I did with jazz musicians at the 11th Newport, California Marriott Jazz Party. Today's interview is with clarinetist and saxophonist Anat Cohen. Listen not only to her interesting story and to the passion and joy that she has about being a musician, but also to some of her wonderful music. So hang on. Here come the show. Is about the capacity to be completely the person you and I and each of us is. This is a lofty goal. It's not an easy goal to accomplish, to be completely and wholly who it is that you really are. Why is this so difficult to achieve? Because for, I want to say all of us, there will have been a moment in our childhood when we will have demonstrated something which didn't go down all that well with our parents or our older sibling or our grandma or our teacher. Actually, this reminds me of a story that my mother tells about when she was a young girl in school, and there was some talent, something, and my mother got up and sang. My mother had a very big belt voice, you know, a lot of power, not soprano, not soft, not genteel. When she was done, the teacher in obvious judgment, said to the class, "Who likes that kind of singing?" And of course, nobody had the courage to say they did. And my mother always felt shy about singing after that. So, this is not an unusual occurrence. How many children were told just to mouth the words and not sing? But this is just one possible experience. If you laugh out loud and you have a parent that's embarrassed about laughter or joy or happiness or noise, then you can learn that laughing out loud's a bad thing. If you know the answers to a lot of things and your parents have a feeling that they are not that smart, maybe they want to stop that in its tracks. The possibilities are endless. The ways in which the most casual of comments can be taken to heart, and we can make decisions about what we had better not show about ourselves. And then, of course, we live in a culture which has very strong ideas about what's right and what's wrong and what's good and what's bad, what's ugly, what's pretty, what's attractive, what's distractive. Well, whatever the opposite of attractive is. So you have a bunch of friends, all of whom don't like to play sports. You're a little girl, and all your little friends want to play with dolls. You actually would love to be hitting a ball and running around the bases, but it's clear that that's not a thing in your particular group that goes down well for little girls. So what does that mean? Well, to me, as a psychotherapist, it means that we all learn in one way or another, and sometimes we learn this in a very harsh way, to hide parts of ourselves. Well, that may not seem like any big deal, but let me assure you that not only are you then cheated out of the ability to be all that you can be, which in my view is plenty good enough reason to want to undo that, but it takes energy to suppress parts of ourselves. And so a certain amount of energy which we could be donating, using, experiencing in our lives is stolen from us, keeping down the laughter, the desire to play sports, the desire to sing out loud, whatever it is, right? So, that's what this show is about. It's about the unfortunate fact that in my experience, all of us, in one way or another, were encouraged to hide or discouraged from showing parts of ourselves. And I talk, usually in these shows, about why this happens, how it happens, how you can discover it in yourself, what you can do about it, how you recover aspects of yourself which you've had to deny, why that is difficult. In addition, I play interviews from my Anatomy of an Artist interview series. And I do this because when you listen to a person who has made their living or their life with an art, you are listening to someone who, at least in the area of their work, is exactly who they are. Because, unfortunately, in our culture, we do not encourage people to spend a life, dedicate a life, immerse themselves in an art. And so in order to do it, you either have had to have terrific encouragement in your early life, which I'm very happy to say the woman I'm interviewing here today, Anat Cohen, did have in her life. And actually, if you were listening last week to Kevin Morrow, he too had what I consider to be an atypical childhood, and actually all this month, because Jason Bradley as well, the first interview in March. All of these people come from families where the parents were able to say, "Well, this seems to be who you are. Boy, that's terrific. Enjoy it." And in Anat's case, everyone in the family loved music. And so everyone in the family, in one way or another, is a musician. Anat and her two brothers, her mother and her father. And this surrounding of, living with. And as Anat says, it was just a fact of life in the family. Everybody played music. Everybody listened to music. Everybody loved music. Music was part of our life. And so she can be, could become who she is, which is not only an extraordinary musician on clarinet and saxophone, but a person who, and you'll hear me talk about this over and over in the interview, when you see her on stage, is completely the music. The entire time she or anybody else is playing, you can see that Anat is in it. She's captured by it, enmeshed in it. And I use the Yiddish word in the interview, quelling in it. And that makes her not only extraordinary to listen to, but so wonderful and exciting to watch. So I was so grateful. I was attending the 11th Newport, California, Marriott Jazz Party. And Anat was the very first person that I wanted to and the very first person that I got to interview. I also interviewed, I think, five other musicians, all of whose interviews you will hear in the following weeks, and all of whose music you will hear. As you will hear, cuts from Anat's album. So I'm going to play one of those cuts right now. It's called "The Change Is Gonna Come." It's a tune by Sam Cooke. I'm going to play that, and right on the heels of that cut, I'm going to play the interview with Anat. So, "A Change Is Gonna Come," played by Anat Cohen and her wonderful musicians, all of whose names I will give you later. Thank you.
I'm here with Annette Cohen in a big empty space at the Newport Jazz Party. And I was just able to watch Annette on... I just have to, because sometimes I don't push the record button and I...
Yeah, you can leave it right here on my foot.
Yeah?
Yeah, right.
Okay,
here.
So now you can the tape recorder is now on Annette's foot.
Leg.
And I want to say that, you know, I didn't know about you. This is the first time I've heard you.
Okay.
Yes, and so you are not only so extraordinary to hear, but you are wonderful to watch.
Oh.
You're the only person on the stage who seems to have the music in their entire body. It's wonderful. You're the joy, the pleasure, you react to every... I know you know this. You react to everything that's happening on stage. You react to everything you're playing. It's so wonderful to watch. So... I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, Annette.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's quite clear that you do both of those things, that this is your life,
this art,
this music. There's no question about it.
Huh.
And so I always ask the same question, and that is, how did it happen? How did it find you? How did it start?
All right. That's fair enough. I like the question. I'm not sure the answer can be pinpointed to one way or another, but...
When do you remember knowing that this was...
I think the answer is pretty clear in my case, because I'm coming from a musical family.
Ah, yes.
And I have... my parents love music, really love music, and my brothers are musicians.
How many of you are there?
There are three of us. I have an older brother, Yuval, who lives in Israel, and a younger brother, Avishai, who lives in New York. And Avishai plays the trumpet. Yuval plays the soprano saxophone. And we grew up in a musical household.
That is, your parents played as well?
My parents, yes, but not... My father is not a musician, and... He did not study music, but he loves it. So he can fool around with different instruments. And my mother did have some musical education. And when I was born, she was looking to do something closer to the house. And she became a music teacher in kindergartens. So it took us three jazz musician children to snobbish jazz musician to really acknowledge our mother as a musician. Because she was not, you know... She was not playing jazz and she was not performing on stage, but she is a musician, she's a music teacher, she worked in music for over 35 years, and we also learned a lot from her. And so there's a definitely love for music, and my parents gave us all the support of taking us to lessons, waiting for us, driving in different places in different times. Then we all got into, we went to junior high school for the arts, one after another. We went to a conservatory that took many, many hours. They had to drive us from the school to the conservatory, wait for us until 8:30 p.m. twice a week, and take us home, and really dedicated, came to all our concerts, heard some, I'm sure, some awful music on the way, but never, ever, in any given moment, said to us, you know, music is not a profession, or maybe you should do something else, or won't you consider doing something else? Because we went to junior high school for the arts and high school for the arts. And
well, okay, wait, I want to stop you and back you up just a little bit. Do you remember as a little girl thinking, I want to do that, or I like that, or...
Here's where the family becomes a very strong part of my life. It's something we did.
It was just a part of the family life.
I was doing other things. I was playing basketball and I was swimming. But of course, after I was playing some keyboard, and my teacher said, "Oh, you can't play basketball when you play the keyboard because you can break your finger." So slowly, everything else became, you know,
irrelevant.
Neglected and irrelevant, and the music became the only thing that we did. And I think because that's what we did in the house, it was never like...
It wasn't separate.
It was
integral,
it was always integral of what we did. And also, you know, when my brother was playing something, then my older brother played something, then my younger brother and I wanted to play too, and then they were playing and I wanted to do it, and we kind of influenced each other. So it just became something we did. And the truth is that my two brothers got into jazz before I did.
Ah, yes.
And what I do remember is that I was still playing more classical music on the clarinet.
On clarinet first.
The clarinet was first, before the saxophone. And I used to go hear them playing in the big band. And I remember that life of, like, sitting in a big band, one person getting up to play a solo, everybody kind of like, yeah, and moving and laughing and looking at each other and doing, like, kind of like notions of like cool, and this whole, it seemed so exciting to me that I really wanted to be part of it. I wanted to be part of it because of the social part.
Yes.
Of that.
Yes, it's an interaction.
Right.
Right? It's not like classical where everybody's playing what they play. Right?
Well, they are definitely interacting in classical music, but they're not talking in between. And they don't say yeah to each other when someone plays.
Right,
no, but I like the spontaneous, and I like when something nice is happening, and you mentioned it when we started this interview. You know, I like to react with my body. I like to jump when the music makes me happy. I like to dance when it's moving me.
Yes.
And I like when something is yummy and to say it's yummy.
Yummy. Yes. And you can see it in you. And it's so much, it's so wonderful. I mean, it's your joy, it communicates across the stage. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the way you, sometimes you take one of your hands off the instrument, you know? Not everybody does that. It's you're moving all the time. It's like, I mean, maybe I'm making this up.
You know what? I don't know when I take my
hand
off the
I'm sure it's completely spontaneous, and what it looks like, and you have to correct me if I'm wrong, is what it looks like is that you're so much a part of the music that you're playing that it's not necessarily going through your brain what you're doing, how you're moving, what you're playing. It's just sort of coming through you. Do you know what I mean? Do you think I'm all wrong?
No, I mean, I don't think you're wrong. I mean, it's hard for me to analyze. I do know that I love to be surrounded by music. Mm-hmm. I love to be drowning in music.
Yes.
And I love to be on stage when playing jazz and having the music happening now, at the moment. And the beautiful thing about jazz is it's a moving art. It's not like...
It's evolving. It's always evolving. Right.
And I had a conversation with one of the Clayton brothers the other day, and we're talking about jazz, and we're talking about art and about paintings, and I tried to compare it to painting, and he said, no, no, no.
It's static.
You know, when you look at the painting, you can walk away, you can come back, and you're going to look at it, and it's going to be the same.
Yeah.
But jazz is not.
No.
It's never the same.
No. No. And the other thing, I mean, I know I keep coming back to this place, and I'm sorry, it's boring, I know, but you are completely aware of what everybody is playing. And, or at least that's what it looks like. And when somebody plays something wonderful, you can see it in you. You're alive to it, right? And, I mean, that must be wonderful to play with you. That's what I think. You know, it must be a joy to be on stage with you.
Lynn, I have to confess here. I mean, you saw a set when I'm playing with some of the best musicians in the world. So it's very easy to just admire constantly what's going on around me.
Still, everybody doesn't do it. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, maybe it's a personality, but, you know, when I meet a person, I like to go, hey,
yeah,
how you doing?
Yes.
And you know, I like to hug a person that I've missed, and you know, I like to wink at people if they do something funny, and, you know, I like to communicate with the eyes. And being a horn player, playing the clarinet, playing the saxophone, often I can't say stuff. So I have a horn in my mouth, and I only speak, I can speak with my eyes, and yes. I can look at someone. And it's just a, you know, it's a wonderful thing to, you know, really a high, very high level of intimacy when you make music with other people. And sometimes I only get to know people on the stage because some people, they're shy.
They're shy. And it's only coming out of them on stage.
Yeah, and they can say things that maybe they wouldn't be able to say in words, but they can say it in notes. And the
interaction, it's a little like lovemaking, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I mean, yes. It can be so intimate and it can be, you know, so sensual or so aggressive. And you really get the wide spectrum of emotions when you play music. And it's nice to connect to different sides of people that maybe you really won't get that side when you just talk to them.
I'm sure that's true. The other thing I find myself thinking over and over as you're talking is that so much of who I think you are, that you're describing the way you're describing yourself, I imagine that this all goes back to the safety of the family that you grew up in, the family where everybody was supported, where everybody was encouraged, where you were allowed to do that, this is a Yiddish word comes to mind, kvel, you know?
Kvel, yeah.
For each other, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe I'm wrong about that, but it seems to me that you take that with you into the world and you share that with everybody because you have it.
Well, it could be. I mean, sharing is something that you have to grow into and you have to learn to appreciate when other people are kind enough to share with you what they know. Mm-hmm. And I've met a few generous people in my life that allowed me to come into their world, or they share with me, if it's just spend time, wisdom, musical notes, information, it can be a lot of different things. So sharing with each other, appreciating, acknowledging, this is really the key to preserve this tradition. I mean, I guess any tradition, really.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And keeping yourself respectful and passing on whatever, if someone did something good for you, to do the same for others. And to just be, be generous. And I think this is a really important thing that you learn from the masters. And I think sometimes people, that they get older, they learn, you know, they do it more. And they share more.
Ah, yes.
Because
they have less to lose or less to prove, or
maybe
because they just have more stuff.
Who knows what's the reason? You know, some people just realize, wait a second, why am I just going to be grumpy and just hold everything to myself? How about just sharing and letting other people have the chance and watch people? You know, when on stage, if you want to get someone to play better, I think there are a few ways to do it, but if you're going to give them a dirty look,
that isn't going to do it.
It ain't going to make them open up and sound better.
That's right.
If, you know, so to learn how to bring the best out of people, I mean, it's a real art. I mean, it's always a mystery to me, and it's something to learn, and it's coming on stage when you play music, and it's also coming when you want to just make a person feel comfortable at your house or in an interview or whenever, you know?
Yes, 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 yes.
You know, you're talking to me and you're smiling the whole time.
Yes, I know.
And you know, it's very, it makes me feel very comfortable, and it's very relaxing, and I'm not afraid or intimidated to share information, although we are recording what we're saying.
And I will tell you now that I edit this, so if there's anything you say you decided you don't want to say, I'll take it out.
No,
seriously.
I'm not regretting anything.
But you know, it's interesting.
Being very open with you.
Yes, you are. And again, I mean, I think a lot of this can be attributed to what you must have gotten from your family. You know, the idea that it is safe to be open to people, that it's a good thing to want to make people comfortable, that you don't personally feel like shutting anybody down or criticizing or judging. At least that's not what it, that's what it looks like on stage, and that's what it looks like here also.
Possibly. I mean, I can't say that I was, you know, born like that, or I'm not sure I've always been like that, but, you know, I definitely learned that vibing people is getting the opposite reaction, so that's definitely not the way. So, you know, whoever is listening, be generous.
Be generous, yes. Smile and be generous. There's no question about it. Okay, so now, what are you doing? What are your plans?
What do you have? Are you doing for the rest of your life?
Do you know?
Good question. You know, I was never good at those questions of, you know, where you see yourself in 1 year, or in 5 years, and then in 10
years.
Well,
next week.
Next week I'm going to be in Portland, Oregon.
Ah, yes.
Yes, I'm going to play the Star Spangled Banner at the Blazers via the...
Really?
The L.A. Lakers game. Solo clarinet.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, I want to tell you, Gone with the Wind, oh my God, it was so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Oh my God, it was really, I meant to tell you that at the beginning.
Thank you.
I wanted to tell you, I didn't want to let that go.
Go with the Wind.
Yeah, it was so beautiful.
Thank you. I fell in love with this song.
It's a
back
beautiful song, and not a lot of people do it. That's my experience. I mean,
yeah,
you don't
true.
Hear it a lot.
I
have
people.
An old recording of Frank Sinatra.
Mm-hmm. That's a good song. Uh-huh. Very good song. Yeah. Well, what's the plan? You know, I have a band with my brothers. We play.
You
I
do?
Have, yeah, we're calling the Three Coens.
Really?
Yeah, the Three Coens Sextet. So we play. We just played in Europe a couple of weeks ago. We played in Paris. We played in Italy. We're playing in Portland next week. You know, we get together, we play music, we share music. It's an incredible thing, as I mentioned to you before. But I have my own quartets, I have my own music, which is different that usually than the music that you hear this weekend at the jazz party. I love world music, I play a lot of Brazilian music, uh-huh. I play a lot of different kinds of music. So my music is sometimes more world-influenced, although everybody is world-influenced, because we live in
the
world.
Are you writing?
I do write. In the last, you know, year, it's been a little bit more challenging for me. I was moving apartments. There's a lot of...
Where are you living now?
I live in Brooklyn. I was in the West Village. Now I live in Brooklyn. I love it. In Williamsburg.
Mm-hmm.
Right in between the Hasidic Jewish people and the computer hackers. In a good place in the middle. And... You know, I do, you know, if you can call the music business, then, you know, I kind of run my own
yes.
business. I have a record label,
huh?
Which is called Anzic Records. All my CDs are Anzic, A-N-Z-I-C, Anzic Records.
What does it mean?
Anatta Music, Anzic.
Oh, of course.
There you have
right.
it. And I run it with my partner, Oded Levary, which is a fantastic musician and composer, arranger. He actually orchestrated and arranged a whole album for me with a modified big band, with the Anzic Orchestra. So that's one of my albums called Noir. But, you know, I do a lot of different things, and I do a lot of emails every day. So as the emails,
they
explode. You reply something,
it
immediately comes back with another question.
It's very scary, I know.
So I think the main challenge for me right now in my life is how to balance all those aspects of life that... The world got, you know, evolved so fast with the internet and with social media and internet and emails and a lot of interactions, you know, texting, and in between all of that, how do you just break away from that and you just pretend it doesn't exist and you just say, okay, now I just do music? And I sometimes find it's challenging to cut it all off and just concentrate on the music. There's always some thing you have to send and something you need to mail or email or reply or call, or it's quite interesting.
I really understand, and I do think that, well, I think that what you say about all the technological stuff that we now have to deal with that people didn't used to have to deal with, you know, that so badly complicates
right.
everybody's life. But I also think that balance is a serious dilemma for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, figuring out, you know, do I have a social life? You know, do I have a family life? Do I have quiet time?
Right.
Do I get to read? You know?
Yeah.
And do I get to do my music? What do I, you know?
And do I get to not have guilt about choosing any of that?
Exactly, exactly, exactly. So,
right.
Actually, one of the questions I ask is, and actually we've been speaking to it, is to talk a little bit about what it's like when you have dedicated a life to music, which you clearly have done.
It's just a 24/7 proposition. There's never, you're never on a break. You're never not a musician.
No.
Because you know, if you sit down and say, okay, I have some dying time, either you're gonna listen to something, or you're gonna imagine some music, or you're gonna write, or you say, I can practice, or you go out to hear music, or you. It's very hard to be complete, you know, away and really pretend it's not. It's never not a part of your life.
Yes.
Even when you take a hike, you're basically getting rejuvenated, so you can.
So that you can
go
do it.
And do it. It's always like, it's always for the music. You live for the music, and the music is there for you. As I like to say, the music is the source of my happiness and my misery.
Oh my!
So it's a wonderful thing. I'm very blessed. I mean, I feel extremely fortunate that I actually get to travel around the world and have stages, and people come to hear music. And some people still remember those musicians that are alive. They're actually standing there playing. It's not just music that is played in the background from the elevator or something.
Right.
So you know, I'm very grateful that I get to do it, to do what I do. But
it has a price.
It's not easy.
No. That's a very good place to stop.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Anna.
Lynn, it's absolutely my pleasure, Lynn.
Thank you.
So, it's propitious that the first interview I did of the musicians at the Newport Jazz Party was with Anat, because Anat is the poster child for what I talk about in the show. That is, she is someone who just is who she is. And she is especially who she is. And I don't know her in her personal life. I don't know her in her family life. I don't know her except in seeing her as a musician and, of course, in this conversation. And in both of these, in the conversation and so glaringly on stage when you see her perform, what you see is what you got. She is herself. She, when she's happy and moved by the music and excited, you see it in everything. And when she's playing, you hear it in everything. And you heard her say that she's so responsive to the world, responsive to what other people are playing, responsive to what other people are needing. Her desire to be as generous to others as others have been to her, that when she's playing, when she can't speak her generosity, she uses her eyes. But when she's playing, she uses her music. And to watch that is to know what it means to truly be oneself. And as Anat points out, and as the interview that I'm doing next week will also point out, and the two that I did before this, well, all of them, really, being who you really are, being true to thine self, demonstrating without guile, without protection, really, without denial, without cover. It's what I like to call a cover story. If you're curious about the concepts that I talk about, cover story is one of them. This is the idea that you got of who you had to be, and so you put that cover story on like a spy, and then you present that. Never mind that it means that there are sometimes many really important things about you that you keep secret. But you can't be a great musician and keep secret, because when you keep secret as a musician, when you don't let yourself come through the music, it's boring. It's static. It's, as she says, it's elevator, you know. But when you're in the presence of a musician who is who she really is, and she's letting you see it, and she's loving the fact that she can be that and that you can take that from her. Well, as she said about seeing live musicians, there's something mystical and magical about that, that you don't get not only from elevator music, you don't get it from anything that's not live. So although I am playing cuts from her CD, and you can hear it, I'm sure that you heard in the first cut that I did before I did the interview, the amazing passion and joy in it, and you'll hear it in the last cut that I'm going to do as well. It's Jitterbug Waltz by Fats Waller. And before I forget, because I really never want to forget to do this, I'm going to tell you who else is playing on the CD. So, of course, Anat is playing clarinet, tenor saxophone, soprano saxophone, and bass clarinet. Jason Lindner is playing piano, Fender Rhodes, and the Prophet keyboard. Omer Avital is the bass player. Daniel Friedman is on drums and percussion, and Gilad Hexelman is on guitar. Okay, now I feel like I have done that. That's good. So what's left for me to do is to tell you my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow. Do not leave the E out of Lynn. I know that most people don't spell it that way, but if you don't put the E in Lynn, you'll get a different The Lynn Show, which might be interesting. But if what you want is the podcasts from my show, all of which are up on my website, then you want The Lynn Show with an E. If you're curious about the concepts that I talk about having to do with being who you really are, they all exist in my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And the information about the book and the audio book and the workbook are all on the CD. I'm sorry, and they're all on, are all on the website. And if you're interested at all in the song you heard at the front of the show and the song that's going to close the show, they are on my CD, which is also on the website. So if that's what you want, then you do need to put the E on the Lynn in the Lynn Show. So now, as always, I want to thank Josh Hackney, who shows up every week to make sure the sound is as good as it can be. Any errors of sound are mine, not Josh's, who taught me how to use the program that I am currently using to edit, who actually has taught me everything that I needed to know to do the show. And when I either can't remember or can't do it, Josh shows up and does it for me. So as I say every week, if you need anything having to do with computer or electronics, recording, you name it, then Josh is who you want. And you can get it. You can get him also at my website, thelynshow.com. And as always, I hope that you heard something that you can use in this show, something that you didn't know, or something that you did know that you'd forgotten. Maybe it was just some of the beautiful music coming through Anat to us. Maybe it was something that triggered some memory for you. Maybe you even became aware of a quality of your own that you might be hiding. Well, whatever it is, I hope that you got something that you found compelling. Because I will be here next week, same time, same station, and I certainly hope that you will be too. And so now we're going to go out on another cut from Anat Cohen's CD, which is called Notes from the Village, and I think that's because she was living in Greenwich Village at the time, and there's a picture of her on the front of the CD holding her clarinet, and I'm sure standing in the village. Anyway, this is the Fats Waller tune, Jitterbug Waltz, with Anat Cohen. Thank you.
older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. See that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten